We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves, 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings, as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Ryan Alvarez.
Good evening, everybody. Here we are on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. It is Friday night, September 26, 2014, here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. We are live every Friday night, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern, for 2 full hours here. What a show we have got for you tonight. It's been quite a day, actually. We were scheduled today to have Daniel Zaleski on the show. He is a documentary filmmaker who is doing a... Well, a documentary filmmaker on the story of the Sodder Children. And if you've never heard of the story of the Sodder Children, you can just Google Sodder Children, S-O-D-D-E-R. 5 children that disappeared decades ago. There was a house fire, and some of them got away, and some of them, unfortunately, did not. And it is a very detailed story. The children... Obviously, the first thing one would think is, well, they were in the house, and the house burned down, and the children were consumed in the fire. Well, there's a lot of people that think that, in fact, the children were not consumed in the fire. There were investigations done. There were very, very few bone fragments found. Very little evidence that anybody else was in the house when the fire started. And there have been a lot of rumors of the children, at least some of the children, allegedly being seen years later. It is a very famous disappearance story. And unfortunately today, Daniel Zaleski was unavailable. And so we're not going to be doing that show here this evening. My buddy Andrew Lutsky, who is the man behind the After Dark Radio Show Facebook page, he wrote a great article about the Sodder Children. Which, if you look around on the first page of Google, when you Google the Sodder Children, you'll find it very, very quickly. I'll try and find the link here in a second. I actually don't have it in front of me, but he wrote a great article, so I was going to have him on the show, but he was unavailable as well. And so tonight, we are going to bring my wife onto the show. Long time we've been talking about her experiences with ayahuasca. When she was in college, she took a trip to Peru, and under the guidance of a real-life shaman... Her and many others in her class, they experimented with ayahuasca, and she went on a journey. And so we're going to talk about that here tonight. And we're also going to be talking a lot about the sea. We're going to be talking about whales. We're going to be talking about mysteries of the deep. If you'll recall, we've had some photographs up of late that are allegedly of sea monsters. And I sent one of them to her, and she said, that is not a sea monster, and I can tell you what that is. So we're going to talk about that, as well as weird underwater sounds. Some of you may have heard of the bloop, which was a very, very strange sound emanating from deep, deep under the ocean. Have we figured out what the bloop is yet? What exactly is it? We're going to be talking about that tonight as well. Plus, one of my favorite topics, animal intelligence. We're going to be talking about exactly how smart... some of these whales are, and how human-like they are, and a lot of their behavior. So that's coming up a little bit later on tonight. And until then, we are going to talk some news. We got a lot of news stories here. I know the last couple of weeks we haven't gotten to a lot of news, but we are going to get into some of that tonight, as well as read some emails. And It now seems to be, I don't want to say it's going to be a weekly thing. I don't think I'll be that lucky. But last week, we played some EVPs, electronic voice phenomenon. Supposedly, I guess, the voices of the dead. And as it turns out, I have a friend who is a ghost hunter, and he has sent me another EVP to play this week. So we're going to be playing that here on the program here tonight. We're also going to be taking your phone calls, your emails, and your tweets as well. And I've got some, I got a little bit of bad news. Coincidentally, the night that my wife is coming on here, both her website and the After Dark Radio Show website are currently down. Now, if you're listening to this on a replay on Saturday, hopefully you can just go up and all of the websites are working right now. But currently, AfterDarkRadioShow.com is having a database error. And the same server is the one that her website is on. And so currently, WhaleScout.org is also down. So what I'm going to do, if you don't have any of the information about how to contact me here tonight, I am going to read it off here on the air. And then if you don't write it down or you forget it, I recommend you head up to WrestlingObserver.com, which is my main website, and all of the information is up there. If you need to get the phone numbers, if you need to get the email, if you need to get any of that, it is up for right now at WrestlingObserver.com. And of course, tomorrow you'll be able to go back, hopefully, to all of the regular websites, including AfterDarkRadioShow.com. But if you want to contact us here tonight, very quickly, here is the information. If you would like to call, and this number is up at WrestlingObserver.com if you forget it, we have three numbers. You can call toll-free 855-478-4478, which is pretty easy to remember, 855-478-4478. That number is toll-free. If you would like to give us a call, if you cannot get through on the 800 line, you're welcome to call 425-482-1686. Once again, 425-482-1686. Or you can call 425-488-0525. That is 425-488-0525. You can put all of these numbers in your phone, and that way, in the future, you can give us a call anytime you want when we're here doing After Dark Radio. If you'd like to contact me on Twitter, I am at Brian Alvarez. I will be monitoring my Twitter throughout the evening, so you can check it out, at Brian Alvarez. And someone here on Twitter has already noted that they tried to click to the site and it is down. So there you go. That's right. Hopefully it'll be back up soon. And as well, you can contact me via email, brian@wrestlingobserver.com, and make sure you put After Dark in the subject line. That is brian@wrestlingobserver.com, and make sure you put After Dark in the subject line. And this is something that you learn when you've done radio, podcasts, etc. for many, many years. Sometimes things just go wrong, and you've got to make the best of the situation. So we're doing the best we can here. So give us a call, everybody, right now. The phone lines are open. Anything that is on your mind, we can talk about here on the program. And some emails here as well that we're going to get into here today, and a lot of stories to talk about here. Should mention, if you are in the area, if you're in the Seattle area, or if you just want to kind of follow what's going on here at After Dark Radio, I was talking a little while ago, last week actually, I discovered a new cemetery that is here in town. It is called the Bothell Swedish Cemetery, and it is literally, if you drive, it is about 1 minute from my house, and if you walk, it's probably about, I don't know, 10 minutes from my house, but I never knew this cemetery was here. It is kind of, I don't want to say it's hidden, because it's not hidden, but it's located in a place where if you're not looking for it, you're not going to see it. It's sort of like, if you imagine like a residential neighborhood, not really like a neighborhood so much, but if you're like driving down a hill and you see a bunch of driveways, I guess you kind of got to live in sort of a rural area to have a place like this. But when I'm driving down this hill, there's a driveway, a driveway, a driveway. And then one of the driveways is actually the entrance to the Bothell Swedish Cemetery. I have lived in Bothell for 30 9 years. I went to high school at Bothell High, which is, you can walk 1 minute from Bothell High, and you'll be at the Bothell Swedish Cemetery. I went to this high school. I've lived here. I moved here like a minute away from this cemetery. I never knew it was there. And I was looking around, as I mentioned last week, and I saw the information about it. And I went to Google Maps, and I was like, oh, my God, it's right there? So I went and checked it out, and I only checked it out briefly. It was the middle of the night, and I didn't want to be kind of poking around in a cemetery, but it's pretty creepy. And so one of my friends, actually, I guess, just found out about the cemetery as well. And she wrote here, I drove by both of the old cemeteries today to check them out, and they definitely look creeptastic, especially the Swedish one. I think it would be interesting to investigate either of them. My husband Jack says he's game as well. Have you ever gone ghost hunting before, and have you got any cool equipment? That's from my friend Tina. So I don't have any cool equipment, really, but it's time to do an investigation. And I'm not sure exactly when we're going to do it, but we're going to do an investigation here, heading out to this this Bothell Swedish Cemetery. And as I noted, there's another one up in Bothell as well that we can kind of check out. And maybe I can get some advice. I've actually got, as noted, I'm going to play an EVP tonight from a friend of mine who actually is a legitimate, honest-to-God ghost hunter. And we'll hopefully have him on the show, actually, one of these days. Unfortunately, he lives way out on the East Coast, so he's not going to come out and join this investigation. But maybe I can get some tips from him, and maybe I can get my own EVPs to play here on this program. So that's kind of the update about what's going on with the ghost hunting around here. I've never really gone ghost hunting, as I've talked about many times on this show. When I was younger, when I was a teenager, you know, we did go and check out the famous Maltby Cemetery, which if you ever check out the book Weird Washington, you've probably seen one for whatever state you live in. They've got a whole series of them. But I got the book Weird Washington. We even interviewed the author here on the show. It was great. If you go back into the archives, if you're a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com, you have full access to all of the archives. But he talked about the Maltby Cemetery. It's in the book. And it was a very, very creepy place. They claimed that there was a staircase at the Maltby Cemetery, and there were 13 steps in this staircase. And if you found your way down to the 13th step, the 13th step would take you to hell. And so apparently nobody had made it down to the 13th step alive. The legend was, like, if you got down there, you'd go crazy or something like that. And we never saw the 13 steps to hell. By the time we went to investigate it, it was kind of like, it was buried back in the woods, and they had built houses all around it, and it was private property, and they weren't cool with kids tromping around back there trying to find the legendary Maltby Cemetery. But that's really the extent of any sort of paranormal investigations that I have done. So I'll have to find out some of the specifics about these two cemeteries here in Bothell. The Bothell Swedish Cemetery is the oldest cemetery in all of Bothell. And some of the original founders of Bothell from the mid to late 1800s are buried there. Some of the Bothell pioneers are buried there. And I didn't get very far. I just kind of drove in and I shined my lights and everything like that. I haven't really gotten in and looked around yet, but it's a very, very old and very, very creepy cemetery. So I guess you can all look forward to that, everybody. And hopefully we'll have somebody on talking more ghost hunting in the future. Want to send a shout out to James on Twitter here, who says, After Dark, the best show on Friday and one of the best shows on the Dark Matter Radio Network. So I do very much appreciate that. And again, if you want to send me emails, you can do so. Brian@WrestlingObserver.com, and make sure you put After Dark in the subject line. So as noted, I got an EVP here for you. This is from a good buddy of mine. I've known him for many years, actually. And just recently, he got into ghost hunting. And I think he still wants me to keep his identity a secret. And if that's not the case, I'll reveal his identity next week. He is a member of our message board at the WrestlingObserver.com website. And a lot of you, if you're listening from WrestlingObserver.com, you know this individual. So I'm sure his name will get out eventually, but for right now, we're going to keep it quiet. But I'm going to read his email, and then I'm going to play this EVP. It says here, I have an actual EVP that is going to be featured from this investigation that you are more than welcome to play on the show tonight. This came in a break in questioning this young girl who we had many hours of contact with. It's not usual to not only catch an EVP, but to actually hear it with your own ears. At the beginning of this recording, there is a brief silence, followed by what appears to be a young girl screaming, and then our two investigators confirming that they had both heard this. This scream was captured on a number of different recorders located in various parts of the building. At the time of this recording, everybody, including the employee of the building, was in attendance in the auditorium. And allegedly, there was nobody else anywhere in the building. So let's play this EVP. You're going to hear silence, and then you're going to hear what appears to be a young girl screaming. So here we go. There it was.
What was that?
That sounded like a scream.
Yeah. Did y'all hear that?
There you go. That was definitely a scream. Let's play it again. It's about 10 seconds in. That's definitely a scream.
What was that?
Let's do one more time. I'll crank up the volume. There you go.
What was that?
So that was in a building that was allegedly empty, and two people, at least two investigators, confirmed that they had heard the scream. So there you go. An EVP for you. Let me read a little bit more of this. I may have read this a couple of weeks ago, but here's a little more background on it. I thought I'd give you an update about a special case I went on a couple of months back. You'll recall that at the time, I was unable to provide my information due to confidentiality. Now we have finally gathered all of our evidence and we are ready to present the reveal. I am part of the Carolina Paranormal Society, which is a member of the TAPS family. I'm sure you, as well as many of your listeners, are familiar with TAPS, and we hold the strongest presence in this part of the country. In fact, we've gathered so much evidence, we are hosting a public evidence reveal coming on October 3rd, which is next week, everybody. For any of you in or near Charlotte, North Carolina, you can check out the two-hour evidence reveal, as well as get a chance to investigate with us for a special three-hour investigation of the facility. Trust me when I tell you, these 2 hours are needed to present all of the evidence, which includes EVPs of multiple classes, eyewitness accounts from our team, as well as staff of the building, photos, videos, and more. If you opt to take part in the investigation that follows, we will take our investigators right to the areas that gathered all of this evidence and let you witness for yourself all the activity that this turn-of-the-century school has to offer. All areas of expertise are welcomed. If you've ever wondered what it would be like to investigate a location with as much activity as this, now is your chance. They are selling tickets. For details on how to get the full package or to just check out part of the event, head over to www.ncparaventures.com for more info. That is NC as in North Carolina, paradventures.com. I'll spell the whole thing out one time. NCPAREVENTURES.com. NCPAREVENTURES.com. Since this was my very first investigation, I was in awe of what I witnessed. and I hope that some of you can make it out to see for yourself. And he notes that the two founders of the Carolina Paranormal Society are eager to come on After Dark and discuss more, Matt and Jason. And so I can tell you, Matt and Jason will be on this show sometime in the future. So let's play that EVP one more time. If you listen carefully, in about 10 seconds, you are going to hear a scream that the two of the investigators heard, but others did not. It was picked up on all of their equipment located in various parts of the building, and they insist that there was nobody in the building who would have screamed. So here we go. There you go.
What was that?
That sounded like a scream.
Did y'all hear that?
Yeah. It did sound like a scream. There you go, another EVP. Hey, listen, if you're listening to this right now and you've got EVPs, send them to me. We can have EVP week here on the show or EVP month. And make sure you check out ncparaadventures.com for your chance to go out and investigate your own EVPs. All right, let's see what we've got in terms of news here. We'll do a little bit of news, and then we will then we'll get going here. For those of you that are cat lovers like myself, I've got a story here from io9.com, which I'm actually going to tweet out right here. Check this little hitchhiker out. If you go to my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, you can check out this picture right now. This is from a camera trap in South Africa. There was a camera trap, and the images revealed a mongoose-like genet hitchhiking on the back of at least two different species of animals, behavior never before seen in a mammal. And if you check this out, you can see this giant, I don't know what kind of animal this is. It looks like a buffalo. This buffalo is walking around. It's been captured by a camera trap. And sitting on its back is this genet, a mongoose-like genet, it says here. And apparently there's another one riding around on a wildebeest. So you can check out two of these pictures. He's just walking along, and he's got this little hitchhiker sitting there on his back. And it says here that the series of photographs depicts a large spotted genet, which actually looks very much like a... Looks like a cat. Looks like a savannah cat or one of those Bengal cats. And it's got some amazing eyeshine, by the way. The series of photographs depicts a large spotted genet on top of two individual buffalo. One of the buffalo seems to be unimpressed with the genet and can be seen turning around and thus shaking the genet off. The other buffalo is quite content to let the genet tang along for an evening stroll. The genet seemed to have spent his this entire evening riding buffalo. So you can head over and check this out. This genet is actually a... I would love to have one as a pet. That's a pretty cool-looking animal right there. They've got... If you scroll down even further, you can see kind of a... Kind of another shot of this genet. This one looks like a... It kind of looks like a giant... It's hard to describe what it looks like. Like a cross between a cat and a mouse is the best way I can describe it. Which I guess is kind of what a mongoose looks like as well, but... Anyway, you can head over there and check that out. I put it up on my Twitter. Also, I want to direct everybody to one of my favorite websites, anomalist.com. If you're on the internet right now, I want you to head over there and check it out. There is an article from September 25th. If you go to anomalist.com and you scroll down a little ways, you'll see September 25th, and there is an article here that links to Bigfoot Evidence, bigfootevidence.com. Actually, it's bigfootevidence.blogspot.com. And the title of this thing here on Anomalous is, "Oh, wow, you can totally see Patty's toes in this enhancement." It says here, "Bigfoot Evidence is pretty damn excited, and so are we, after taking a closer look at this new enhancement from M.K. Davis. He's isolated a frame in the Patterson-Gimlin film that very clearly shows the bottom of Patty's foot and her very detailed toes. It would have been next to impossible to engineer a costume with such detail back in the 1960s, it seems highly unlikely that a costume designer would pay such great attention to the bottom of the feet of this costume, since all the attention would be drawn to Patty's upper body and head. The debate over the validity of the Patty footage has raged for years, but this new enhancement definitely strikes a huge blow in favor of the It's Real camp. And if you click the link here, there is, in fact, an amazing enlargement, and there's a, it's frame 61 of the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot film, and the animal or whatever it is, I know some people would say man in a suit, but I really want you to go up there and take a look at this. This thing is turning and it's walking away, and you can see the bottom of its foot. And clearly it has been walking in wet sand because wet sand appears to be collecting on the bottom of the foot. And what MK Davis has done is he has deblurred and then filtered the frame 61 for maximum contrast. And when you do this, it is actually crazy. Not only can you see toes, but if you look at the bottom of your own foot, and you look at the toes, you know what they look like. There's the little one, and then they get progressively bigger, and then you've got a giant big toe. It's not like they're all toes of the same size. And if you look at this blown up picture of these toes here, I mean, there is a very, very, not only can you see the toes, you can count the toes. There is one big toe, the second toe, and then third, fourth, fifth, five toes. You can see the separation between each toe, and of course the big toe is the biggest and the little toe is the smallest. It is amazing detail. And again, if you're going to all of this trouble to make a suit, please explain to me how somebody could make a suit so perfect in the mid 1960s. It is an amazing little shot. So head up there and check it out. And let me know what you think, because as I've mentioned countless times, I really do think that whatever was in the Patterson-Gimlin film, it was real. And I don't believe it was a man in a suit. I've seen a million dudes in Bigfoot suits. I have seen people attempting to replicate the Patterson-Gimlin film. I have seen the biggest Hollywood studios for the biggest Hollywood blockbusters build Sasquatch-like suits. Everything from Chewbacca to King Kong to the Bigfoot and the Million Dollar Man or the whatever it was, $6 Million Man. None of them look real. Every single one of them looks like a dude in a suit. And to me, whatever's in the Patterson-Gimlin film, that thing looks like an animal. I don't know what it is, but that thing looks like an animal. And when I look at MK Davis's work, especially the shot of his foot, that's pretty amazing. It's pretty compelling. And on the subject of photographs, we've got some really weird things going on up in space as well. Now, this from unexplained-mysteries.com, which we normally link to. Oh, look, the website's back. Lucky me. All right, everybody. AfterDarkRadioShow.com is back up. Thank God I went and checked that out right there. All right, if you need the phone numbers, the emails, or anything else, AfterDarkRadioShow.com is up, as well as Whitney's website, which we'll be talking about, which is whalescout.org. You can head up there and check both of those out. Anyway, these two interesting photos from space, both of these you can... If you head to AfterDarkRadioShow.com, they link up there on the left-hand side of the page so you can find them there. This is two more unusual rock formations discovered on the surface of the Red Planet. It says here, thanks to the plethora of high-quality images returned by NASA's rovers, Mars has become a prime example of how the brain can be tricked into interpreting an otherwise abstract pattern as something of significance. The first of the two most recent finds is a rock formation that looks a bit like a set of traffic lights. It consists of a tall stone with several small stones spaced vertically up the side of it. video space journalist Joe Smith. And by the way, what a job, a space video journalist. He said, I saw this one and I thought, hang on, that looks a bit strange. I posted it on the internet and people said they thought it looked like a set of traffic lights as well, although some people did say it looked like a totem pole. And the second object, which you can also see right here, is what they say is a perfectly spherical rock, but I'm looking at it right now and that's not perfectly spherical, but it is very, very round. And this was found a few days earlier by NASA themselves. They explained the ball was likely to have been formed by repeated compacting and hardening, a process known as concretion. Concretion, I guess? But these are two very weird anomalies here on Mars. So if you want to check those out, that's available if you head up to AfterDarkRadioShow.com and head on over to the left-hand side of the page. And also there, and this has gotten a lot of talk of late, Rosetta spots UFO on the surface of a comet. That's right. It says here an object described as a metallic disc has turned up in a close-up photograph of the comet. Eagle-eyed internet users have spotted something rather unusual in one of the photographs returned by the European Space Agency's Rosetta Space Probe, which recently reached comet 67P after traveling for more than a decade across the solar system. The object, which resembles a light-colored circular feature, can be seen against the otherwise dark background of the comet and looks decidedly different from its surroundings. Some people have suggested that the anomaly may be nothing more than a chunk of ice, while others have subscribed to a rather more otherworldly interpretation. And if you go up to unexplained-mysteries.com, which is where this article is at, the article itself has a link to the original full-sized photograph, which I can tell you, it's big, almost 4 meg, and you can click on it and you can see it. And actually, when I look at the original picture right here, it's kind of funny because, I mean, you really got to blow that thing up to check that thing out. There's a lot of eagle-eyed viewers, I guess, is how they explained it. But you can head up there and check it out right now if you'd like to. There is a link to the full-size deal. There's actually a JPEG, and you can actually download the full-sized high-res version, which is even bigger. So head up there and check that out. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Whitney Negebauer. She is going to be talking all sorts of different things, including ayahuasca and some mysteries of the deep. And I've got some questions for her because one of the things that I am very interested in is animal intelligence. And she is live here in the studio since the studio is in my house and she is my wife. And so if you've got any questions for her, you're welcome to post those on our Twitter at Brian Alvarez or send me emails, brian@wrestlingobserver.com, and we will read them here live on the air. So stand by, everybody. We'll have Whitney here in just a moment. We're back here on the show, everybody. After Dark Radio, Brian Alvarez here, Dark Matter Radio Network. And we are joined live in the studio tonight by Whitney Negebauer of Whale Scout, who, as many of you are well aware, is also my wife. How you doing, love?
Good.
All right, we got a lot of stuff to get into here today. Everybody is well aware of your ayahuasca experience, so we're going to talk about that here tonight. But first off, we got to talk a little bit about the water. I got a lot of questions here for you, and we're going to see what you know about some of this stuff.
What's a test?
It's a test.
Thanks.
That's right. We did a test with Vinny last night with Granny, and I had to offer money to try to get him to pass the test, and ended up paying out $11, but we're not going to do that tonight.
Yeah, I'm glad. And it is a bit of a last minute ad here, so I'm going to do my best. But people have been asking me for a long time to share the ayahuasca story, and so I'm pretty excited to share it with everyone.
All right, that's going to be the main event tonight, but first off, we got to talk about the whales.
Yes.
You, of course, are the director of Whale Scout, and if anybody wants to check out the website, it is whalescout.org, and there is currently an Indiegogo campaign that you are working on raise money to outfit your volunteers here in the Seattle area. So especially if you're listening and you're in the Seattle area, this will be of interest to you. And you've got some cool perks as well if people want to donate. But tell us very quickly about the Whale Scout and Indiegogo.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, Whale Scout is a project that I started a little over a year ago, like a year and a half ago now. And, you know, basically I started it because people here in Puget Sound don't always know that the whales are coming through our waters, even near Seattle. And so I'm really into land-based whale watching, and so what I'm trying to do is get other people out whale watching with me and other volunteers that are experts, and to get them involved with, you know, giving back to the whales that we're watching. And there's, in Washington State especially, there's a huge whale watching industry that is, you know, up in the San Juan Islands. And a lot of researchers have found that the whale watching boats do have an effect on the whales. And, you know, people are out there having amazing experiences on these boats watching whales, and they're, you know, having, you know, profound, life-changing, you know, inspiring experiences. But, you know, what are the whales getting out of this? So that's kind of, you know, the idea of Whale Scout, is to still have these experiences, but from shore, where it's a little more responsible to watch them and to really give back to the whales. And so, you know, I also have a podcast on iTunes as well, and where I interview whale experts, authors, researchers. And so that's another project that we do. And this Indiegogo is, we're trying to outfit our volunteers. They're going to be out there helping you watch whales. So it's gone really, really well. We only have about 9 days left to contribute. So just type in Whale Scout at Indiegogo. And of course, there's links all over my Facebook and website for that.
Now, a lot of animals, actually, when people go to the zoo, you know, they see big animals, like, you know, I think people know that elephants are, like, intelligent, but I don't think they know to what degree. You know, they just kind of hear when they're a kid that an elephant never forgets, and elephants, you know, but they don't really know anything about to what degree. And when people think about intelligent animals, they think about, like, chimpanzees, primates that are learning sign language and that sort of thing. But I have always been fascinated by this, and my question is, what kind of, I hesitate to say human-like behaviors, but I have no other way to put it because I'm just a dude on the radio here. What kind of human-like behaviors would really surprise people in regards to, like, some of the whales that you were, or any whale, actually, whales, dolphins, any sort of marine mammal? I mean, what kind of human-like behaviors do they exhibit?
Well, I think what you're trying to ask is not human-like behaviors, but what you're trying to ask is, you know, what sort of behaviors do marine mammals or whales exhibit that would demonstrate intelligence, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. You know, we're all, you know, humans, and we think that we're super intelligent. And so we are the yardstick to compare intelligence to, but it's probably
honest to God,
really...
let me jump in real quick. I didn't interrupt you.
Okay.
I don't really believe that. And you could talk more about this. I mean, we are the top of the food chain, but I think, well, maybe we're not.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the food chain, I guess.
Well, I eat all other animals. I have not been eaten by an animal yet. So I'm, I well, personally am at the top of this food chain right here.
We are at the tippy top and we are the only ones up there. There's other animals that are up there too.
Sure.
That's what I'm trying to say.
But all I'm trying to say is I'm not trying to say that necessarily like a whale would be more intelligent than me. Maybe some are, I don't know. But I do think that in general, I believe that people do not give animals enough credit for their intelligence. Mm-hmm. I think I don't even know how to really say this because I know like the Native Americans held animals in high esteem and they really thought very highly of the animals. And like the Egyptians, you know, these cats, the way these Egyptians treated these cats, I mean, you know, they worshiped these cats essentially, right? And I think that there has been, especially in this country, and maybe it's just because of all of the animals that we eat, but we kind of think that these animals are pretty stupid for the most part. And I don't believe that. But go ahead and tell me about marine mammals.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of different ways that we believe that whales are intelligent. And if you look at just the brain size of a whale and or the relationship between the size of a brain and its body, there's a lot of good indications that they're very intelligent. But what I find really fascinating about the cetacean or the whale brain is that they have extremely developed sections of their brain that are dedicated to acoustics and sound that are far more developed than our brains are. And so, people are always trying to like decode, you know, what are all these whale sounds? What do they mean? And it's like, I don't even think we're going to be able to understand that because their brains are more developed than ours are in that area, you know? So it's like, you know, it's going to be really, really difficult to even understand.
So they're using a form of communication that we couldn't even understand.
Well, we don't understand it right now. And there's a lot of scientists out there trying to understand what these clicks, whistles, groans, and all what they all mean. But I mean, they're obviously underwater where it's dark. And so even though they have eyes, their eyesight doesn't do them any good underwater. So they've been relying on sound through evolutionary history. And so they've developed these extremely complicated parts of their brain dedicated to interpreting sound. And so that is what I find to be the most interesting part of their intelligence. Is this brain that is so well equipped to understand sound and its reflections and echolocation. They do also have what we call spindle neurons, which are like responsible for higher thinking. And we see those in apes and I think in elephants. And
what does that mean? Like what in our brain, what does that do for us?
Well, I'm not an expert, but I mean, like thinking about thinking and sort of having, you know, like empathy, you know,
sure,
how our brain works in those sorts of ways that we're not what you would consider like animalistic, you know, out for our own good. But we have these emotional feelings that affect our decision making process. And so that's another line of evidence of intelligence in whales in their brains. And they do also exhibit a lot of other interesting behaviors where they try to protect, you know, another whale species from a predator, or there have been a lot of stories where dolphins have saved humans from drowning.
That's right.
I mean, just tons of cool stories. There's a researcher in Canada that was studying a killer whale, and I guess he was trying to understand their ability to see with their eyes, their vision, and so they did all these studies and they would repeat them over and over again. And the whale every time got it right. And then after a while, like it seemed like it got bored with that game that was devised for it and started getting everyone wrong consistently. And, you know, there's some researchers out there that have gone as far as saying that, you know, they got so concerned with this that they felt like the whale was researching them and playing experiments on them. So,
great.
I mean, it goes pretty deep with those sorts of experiments.
Now, so we've got in this area, there are killer whales, and we've got, I'm quizzing myself here, There are the resident killer whales, mm-hmm. which are not really residents because they go all over the place. Mm-hmm. And then there's the transient killer whales, which also are not transient. They also call over the... I guess they're transient. They're all transient, essentially,
well,
right?
Sometimes we see certain groups over and over and over again. There's a group, we call them the T-65As. They've been hanging out in the San Juans.
T for transient.
Basically, yeah, T for transient. Basically all summer.
Okay, so we've got... Let's just take three pods. There's J, K, and L. Mm-hmm. And each pod consists of a number of whales and like a family unit, correct?
Yeah, those are the resident ones we're talking about now.
Okay, so they communicate with each other underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that you, Whitney, and other whale experts can tell which pod is in the area because they're all essentially speaking a different language, which is exclusive to them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... The word language, I don't know if all people would agree on that that's the correct term, but they have a unique set of calls for each pod that they... Some of them are shared between pods, but a lot of them are very unique. Even down to like... you can think of a pod as like an extended family, and there's some calls that are only used by certain matrilines, so certain... immediate family groups. So yeah, I mean, and it's, I guess, evidence of culture or learned behavior.
Yes.
And so that's another line of evidence for intelligence, is that they have culture, that they're teaching their young that, hey, we make this kind of call.
Not that kind of call.
Not that one, but we use this one. And so that's another line of evidence of culture, intelligence. So yeah, I mean, and anyone can listen. They have these really cool hydrophones in Puget Sound at orcasound.net, and you can also look at Google listening for orcas, and you can go through a little tutorial where it shows you how to tell them apart. And it kind of takes a little bit of practice, and there's a lot of nuances in there, but I'm getting okay at it, where I can kind of tell. But yeah, it's a lot of fun to do.
But this is not even like guesswork, because if you hear a call and you go, okay, that's L pod.
Mm-hmm.
All of the whales, to a person like me, they would all look the same, but you can differentiate whales based on their fin, correct?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can. In southern resident population, every individual, all 79 of them, are identifiable by their shape of their dorsal fin that comes out of their back, and then the white patch that's right beneath it.
So this is not just a guessing game. You can say, okay, that's L pod. I can tell by the call. Mm-hmm. And then you can go out there and you can confirm that, in fact, you were right. This is L pod.
Mm-hmm.
So we are sure that these three pods are all speaking a different dialect, or whatever you would call it.
Yeah.
Now, has there ever been a situation, since you mentioned learned behavior, where, like, for whatever reason, there was a K pod whale and he left his pod and he joined L pod and then ended up doing their language, or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah. You know, we do have a whale, and we normally think that each pod, or, you know, it stays together their whole life, especially the males. They stay with their mommy their whole life within a few body lengths. We call them the mama's boys of the ocean because they never, ever leave their mom. You know, females, when they start having their own calves, they will, you know, stay in their same pod, but will kind of, you know, have her own calves with her and give herself a little bit more space. But the males always stay with mom. And we have this one whale that we call L87. His name is Onyx, and his mom died. And researchers get very concerned whenever a older female dies, because the social bond between mother and son is very, very strong. And they just rely on their mother so much that they start to worry about that adult male whale once they no longer have their mother. So this whale, for a while, it started to try to link up with like an aunt or other older females in L pod. It didn't really work out. He ended up linking up with a K pod whale, and then that whale died. And now he's swimming with the matriarch of all three pods. She's J2. Her name is Granny. She is estimated to be 103 years old, which is crazy. And so, yeah, now he's swimming with J-pod. So it's like, well, do we consider him a J-pod whale, or is he an L-pod whale? You know, it's really hard to say. We still call him L87, though. And I've always wondered, too, yeah, does he start making J-pod calls? And I don't really know. There's some calls that are shared between pods, but I don't know. Although I have heard, and I want to, I'm just remembering this story now, so I don't want to goof it up. But, you know, I do a lot of work at the Limekiln Lighthouse on San Juan Island, and we track all the pods that go north to south or south to north that pass by the lighthouse. And so we keep track of which whales were there based on the calls that they're making and based on who we see visually. And we, it was kind of a crazy day, and all the whales went by, and then we were back inside the lighthouse talking to people, you know, like giving tours. And then someone said, hey, there's a whale out there. And then we went out there, and sure enough, there was a lone whale swimming by that it looked like it was just trying to keep up with the rest of the group that had already passed. Like, they had gone down, and then everyone turned around, and they were kind of late on the memo, and then turned and went back. And it was repeating this call over and over and over again that was like a K-pod call, and it was like a J or an L-pod whale or something like that. And so they can kind of, what we call, like, mimic each other's calls. And I don't have an ear that is good enough to tell them. But
so
we
why
have
do they think that whale was doing that?
We don't know. It was super bizarre. It seemed like, yeah, that same group had passed by going south, and they all decided to turn around, and it, like, was late on the memo, or there was another group further south that it was, well, maybe I'll go hang out with these guys now. And then they said, wait, nope, never mind, I want to go north. And then was just trying to kind of keep up and was keeping in acoustical contact with that group. I don't know. We were all kind of baffled, and that whale's fine and everyone else is fine. You know, this summer, a lot of the whales have been sort of mixing up in different groups. Normally we think of them all traveling in three separate pods, but they do all get together occasionally. But this summer, what we've been seeing is, you know, part of J-pod, part of K-pod, and part of L-pod kind of smushed together and traveled together for a little bit. So it's not like we would think of as traditional super pod where all the whales come together, but they're getting some mixing in, but just in different sort of ways. So it was probably some sort of situation like that. But yeah, and it was really weird. We were just listening to this whale on the hydrophone, and we're going, hey, is it like calling its buddies or something? Like, hey, wait up. You know, we don't ever know what it's saying.
So do you have any other good, I want more stories of whales researching researchers.
Oh.
Not a lot of them?
Well, there was that one, and people thought that guy was kind of crazy. They'd kind of lost it. Like, well, what's with this guy? But yeah, I mean, what he did was that, you know, they found that giving food is not quite enough of a motivation. You know, they need, like, they would play music to these whales, and that would seem to really interest them, is to play all different kinds of music. And again, this acoustical stimulation was what was most pleasurable to the whales, more than food, more than anything else.
Really?
Yeah.
So are the humpbacks the ones that sing?
Yeah, the humpbacks are the ones that sing, and
they've got songs that they will sing. This, like, they'll sing the same song.
Yeah, they'll sing the same song. All the different whales, you know, in that very large area will sing the exact same song, and then they'll make slight modifications to it over the course of the season, and then all the whales will pick up that change, kind of like, you know, you'd kind of do like a remix of a song or whatever. It kind of, the whales sort of pick that up.
So they sing a song together?
Well, it's not together like in an orchestra. It seems like they're solo, they're by themselves, but they're singing a song, and they repeat it over and over again. And in fact, researchers have found that it's almost like, well, only the males will sing. And they thought for a long time that it was to attract a female, of course. But no, what seems to happen is that other males will join in, and they'll have a group of what we call singers. And it may be some sort of strategy for mating where, you know, especially if a bunch of younger, less dominant males all get together, then maybe together that they would have a better reproductive success. So it may actually be attracting other males. And Roger Payne has done some amazing work where he has studied, and he was really the first person that came out and said, yeah, these are songs like a musician would consider a song with verses and tempo, or I'm not a musician.
Chorus.
Yeah, I guess.
Let's play some humpback songs here.
Oh, okay.
Listen up, everybody.
Thank you.
So this is a humpback whale singing a song. Mm-hmm. And it's got like a structure to the song, is essentially what you're saying.
Yeah. And it'll repeat it the exact same thing over again.
And do they travel around all over the place and sing the song? I mean, do people track them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this mostly happens in their winter breeding and calving area. So they're not really singing in the summertime when they're up feeding. It has something to do with mating.
About that.
Yeah.
Now, on the subject of sounds in the water, mm-hmm. Tell us about the bloop.
Yeah. You sent me this link to the bloop earlier today. And if you want to play that audio, it's not nearly as interesting, I have to say.
See if I can find it.
Yeah. Well, it's just on the Wikipedia. But I do want to talk a little bit about...
here we go. Hold on. Let me play
the bloop.
Let me play the bloop here. I presume this is in a hydrophone.
Yes.
There you go.
That was it.
That was a bloop at 16 times the original speed.
Big whoop is what I say to that bloop.
You say to that? What is this? For a long time, this was a fascination to people. Like, what in the world is this noise underwater?
I'm not really that impressed by the bloop. Maybe I don't understand it enough, but, you know, the Navy has been studying sounds underwater for a very long time. You know, they have a very sophisticated, or at least had, a very sophisticated array of hydrophones all around the ocean where they were just trying to listen for Soviet subs. You know, and that's what they did. And they have tons and tons of data and recordings of all sorts of things that they heard underwater. And most of the time they were listening to whales.
Really?
Yeah. What they...
Was there anything weird that they heard?
Well, I guess the bloop. I don't know. I most of it was classified. Maybe now they're declassifying a lot of it. But I think some of the whale researchers got their hands on it and went to town. And that was pretty cool. But I think a lot of it still hasn't even been heard by scientists. I don't really know. But what they were doing was they were utilizing what they call this deep underwater sound channel. And so, and it's very complicated with physics and sound and water. But basically, if you are deep enough and you have a certain sound frequency, then sound can travel across ocean basins. And so whales have already known about this for a very long time. Things like fin whales, blue whales, these very large whales. And well, they can dive down to these depths and essentially start vocalizing and communicate across ocean basins with other whales. And so that's kind of what I find really fascinating, and probably what, you know, the Navy was using as well to hear or listen for Soviet subs. So, but these whales were, a lot of them, especially in the Arctic or in the Antarctic, were, you know, eating large amounts of krill, which were very patchy and could vary in their location year by year. And so what Roger Payne has hypothesized is that they're using this underwater sound channel to communicate with other whales to say, like, hey, guys, all the krill is over here, you know, this month. And so all these whales would converge and eat a bunch of krill. And of course, they would need to all get together to mate. You know, an ocean's a very big place. So, yeah, this underwater sound channel has allowed these whales to communicate across ocean basins for a very, very long time. And now, of course, we have tons of ships in the water, tons of ocean traffic. And they think that it could be masking some of these calls, especially of other whales that live in more coastal areas. But yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff.
Well, let's talk about sea monsters here. Obviously, this is After Dark Radio. So we had Lauren Coleman on a couple of weeks ago, and he runs the International Cryptozoology Museum. And cryptozoology is the hunt for unknown animals, essentially. And their logo is the coelacanth, which was a prehistoric, thought to be extinct fish that they later discovered is in fact not extinct and is still alive today. And, you know, there's all sorts of people that, you know, people believe in Bigfoot. People believe there could be a dinosaur in the Congo. And a lot of people are skeptical of this. But when you look at all of the water on the Earth, I mean, that's a lot of water. That's a lot of ocean. And it would seem to me that if there are undiscovered large species of maybe even prehistoric animals, they'd probably be in the water. Would that be correct?
Are you trying to say that the bloop was caused by some whale species we don't know about?
No. This is unrelated to the bloop. Apparently, this Wikipedia says they believe the bloop may have been an ice quake.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. And that, yes. I don't know. That seems reasonable.
Sounds good to me, too, you know, based on my knowledge of ice quakes.
Yeah.
Yes. But what is the most recent that you're aware of? I mean, have there been new discoveries of new species of whales of late?
Nothing that I'm major. Not that I'm aware. I mean, sort of. Nothing that, like, we've never seen before, I don't think. I mean, there's some, like, beaked whales that are just live in really deep waters that are rarely seen. And then all of a sudden we'll get a specimen and it's like, oh my God, like we only have like two samples of DNA from some, you know, archaeological site or whatever. So yeah, there are some things like that, but not anything that we've like never seen before that has like four eyes and we're like, what the heck is that?
Well, you know, they're used to, if you look at like, and you read old seafaring books, mm-hmm. which of course I've got tons of old seafaring books here. Yeah. But, you know, they would have, and there were woodcuts of ships being taken down by the Kraken, which was supposedly like a giant squid. And it was a legend for a long time. But, I mean, today we have discovered the giant squid and the giant octopus, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
So these things are down there. What are the chances that, like, a plesiosaur, for example, some sort of long-necked dinosaur is out there undiscovered? Is it likely or unlikely?
You know, there are things in the deep ocean that they are discovering, not whales that rely on air, but some things that don't come up that they're still discovering. So yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not gonna say never that, you know, some of these things could be discovered, but I will say that on a more finer note, that there are different species of whales, and now the geneticists are starting to understand more and more about different, like for killer whales, it's not like one global killer whale species. They think that the residents and the transients are likely to be separate species, having not interbred for like over 500,000 years or something like that. But that's, you know, we've seen both of them a lot. But yeah, the deep ocean, I would say it's less is known about the deep ocean than outer space. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Now, in fact, I just read that somewhere that like the entire surface of the moon and the entire surface of Mars have been mapped, but we haven't even mapped like our own oceans.
Yeah. It makes you start to be kind of pessimistic about the Malaysian flight.
Well, yeah, I'm not convinced that'll ever be found. And let's say go with my idea, which is to drain the ocean.
Yeah, to drain the oceans. Yes.
Yeah. That's how I figured they could find it. But I hate to put you on the spot here.
Hey, what if they had like somehow we're able to like have the moon be like extra magnetic and to pull the water away from that
thought
side?
Of that
like
one.
Super high tides on one side,
sure.
Super low tides on the other.
That might cause some problems here on this side of the planet, but
well, sure. But you know, you got to find that plane.
You've been fascinated by that.
I have.
I haven't found it.
You were saying sorry.
They haven't found it yet. The airplane.
I know.
I don't want to put you on the spot here. I don't expect you to know anything about this, but I'm going to put you on the spot anyway.
Great.
So when I was a little kid, I read all about the Loch Ness Monster. And I don't know if you've ever looked at like a map of Loch Ness, but Loch Ness is a lake. And at one point, I believe it was connected to the open ocean. And it no longer is. And I could be wrong about all of this. I'm not a geologist, everybody. I'm just trying to remember all of this from memory. And I had, you know, there was a theory a long time ago that maybe the Loch Ness Monster might be some type of whale. Have you ever heard this theory?
I have not heard that theory. But yeah, it does look like it is very close to being connected to the ocean.
Sure.
So I'm looking at a map right now.
But would it have been possible for like a group of whales to have gotten into the lock and then it became landlocked And would they be able to survive? Could they?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's nothing that is in a whale's physiology that says that they can't live in fresh water. You know, they're not like fish that like can't survive in, you know, certain levels of salinity.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, sure. Why not?
So it could somehow, there perhaps whales got in the lock and they've just slowly been, and perhaps the last one has already died. They live long lives. Perhaps they reproduce for a while. I don't know, but I just remember that people talked about that, so I thought I would bring that up to you.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a yes. Why not? That
could have been a whale
that got stuck in there and then freaked people out for a long time.
And then died, sadly. All right, let's talk about this ayahuasca experience you had. People have been, I've mentioned this many times. People have asked about it many times. People are fascinated by the idea.
Yeah.
Why did you end up in Peru?
Well, I went to this college that had a lot of really cool study abroad programs. And so what they did was they had what it would be called winter term, where for a month in January between the first and second semester, they had all these cool trips you could go on for like a month at a time. And most of them were abroad. And so I was into archaeology and thought that it would be cool to go to Peru and to study like pre-Columbian culture and stuff like that. Go to all the ruins, go to Machu Picchu. And then we spent some time in the jungle and there was the chance of seeing some of these Amazonian river dolphins that are like pink, like they're legit like light pink. And they live, like I said, in fresh water, and that's how they've evolved. And I thought, wow, that'd be so cool. Like, I was always sort of like this creature that you heard about that seemed unreal, and you never thought you'd ever see before. So I was like, all right, I'm in on this Peru trip.
And so you went to Peru, and how many people went with you?
I think it was a group of like 15 or so. When we went, I didn't really know anyone in that group. And I kind of just sort of like made a few friends. I kind of hung out with like two girls. Well, probably like three different girls were my little buddies. But yeah, the group was just a smattering of college students and then an art professor. And that's really where it all began. You know, I'd never really taken classes with this guy. He did like ceramics and pottery, and I didn't really know a lot about him except that he was kind of out there because he was an art professor.
Mm.
Yeah. And so
so did he mention to you that when we get down there, we're going to go meet a shaman?
Dude, no. I mean, it was like they have, of course, like in like the college description little booklet of all the different places you could go. It talked about some of the places, you know, some of the, like, this is what we're going to do in Peru. This is the focus. It's pre-Columbian, blah, blah, blah. It didn't say, like, oh, we're going to go do a bunch of jungle drugs. Like, of course not. And, like, to get in, you had to apply and, like, just say why you wanted to go and then interview. And then, you know, then they would approve you yes or no. And then that you would pay your money. And then we met up, like, maybe a week or two before Christmas break. And so you basically saw each other. And they set out some of the, you know, reading materials and what you had to do. And it was super laid back.
Materials?
Yeah, they had. Well,
the
we had
doors
to, like,
of perception, perhaps?
Well, no. We just had to, like, read about art, I guess. And, like,
sure.
Pottery. Because that's what he was interested in, was this Incan pottery that was really,
pottery,
really cool.
You say.
Because, yeah, no, you should Google it. There's, like, really cool pieces.
Oh, I'm sure there are, yeah.
And they're all, of course, like, these animals that are different wings on a frog and then a, you know, lion's mane and, you know, the tons of crazy anthropomorphic, like, weird.
So basically
animals.
These people had taken their little trips and then they'd created pottery based on what they'd seen would be the
theory. Yeah. I had no idea. I just thought there was like cool art.
Sure.
I didn't
know
where
the
inspiration for this art really came from.
No.
I didn't really know. So anyways, we just packed up and went down there and then I do want to say too, like, this was when I was in college, first of all, and I had never, and I still don't, you know, experiment with drugs. So I just want to get that out there. This was like a one-time thing for me.
Sure. Now, when did you first discover that, well, this guy is expecting me to try this ayahuasca?
Well, I don't really remember, because I remember before I went, I don't think I was aware of it, but I remember, like, I'm going to put you on the spot, telling you I was going to Peru and telling you I was going to go to the jungle. And I don't know if it was you that planted it in my ear or if I had heard it from the teacher himself. Do you remember?
I don't remember, but I may have brought it up.
Well, I know you brought it up because we talked about it.
Sure.
Because you said, oh, well, you're going to see all these little, like, snakes.
Yes,
I did. And, like, little men. And I was like, oh, this sounds
horrible. I was a little confused because I had, so, basically, and we'll talk about this. It is very strange to me. I have never taken any of these hallucinogenic drugs, but I've read a lot about various different ones. Ayahuasca, DMT, and apparently it's the thing that amazes me is that everybody sees the same thing. Mm-hmm. And the people, I was confused because I confuse ayahuasca with DMT. DMT, when people take DMT, that's when they see the little machine elves.
Oh.
There are these little elves. Well, and so I thought that's what you were going to be taking. And I was like, get ready to see these little elves.
Isn't there DMT in ayahuasca?
There may be, but I think I'm not a drug expert here, everybody, but I know the DMT, they're the DMT elves, I think they're actually called.
Hmm.
I can actually look it up here, but that's what I thought you were going to see, and that's not what you saw.
Perhaps I confirmed your theory because I did not see any elves.
Yes, here we go. I'll read just some of this here very quickly. DMT users have reported encounters with machine elves.
Machine? Why are they machine
entities
elves?
Entities referenced throughout the world in shamanic cultures.
Mm-hmm.
It said that a friend of mine abused DMT for a while, and he kept ending up in a room with the elves. They finally told him to knock it off and not come back for a while.
That's probably smart.
Everybody sees the elves when they take DMT. You did not take that, however. You took ayahuasca.
Okay.
How did the whole thing come about? I mean, when did you end up in the jungle?
So, like, we flew into Lima, I believe. And then, like, I think we may have stayed, like, one night there because, you know, it takes a long time to get down there. And then the next morning, right away, we took another flight. The country isn't very big, but the Andes Mountains go right through the middle. So if you try to get to one side to the other, you basically have to fly. So we took a lot of little flights. So we took the flight, you know, east towards the jungle, and we landed there. And then it was just really ghetto, like, not good place to be, a town. And then we drove out of town to this little harbor on the river. And they had, like, these long canoes with outboard motors on it. And they put all of our luggage in one canoe. And they put all of us in the other canoe. I had, like, literally no idea what to expect. I don't speak any Spanish, like, nothing. And then we're on these canoes going up the river to they called it an eco lodge. And it was like an hour or two up the river to like the middle of nowhere. And
name right there, by the way, just sounds like trouble. We're going to go to the Eco Lodge.
Yeah, the Eco Lodge on the river. And there was a guy, like one of the guides that was in the canoe was kind of telling me about dolphins, like, look out for the dolphins. And I was like, oh, man, like, are there going to be the river dolphins here? Like, I was psyched about the river dolphins. Didn't see any. We get there and it's like these little, like, bungalows, kind of like when you think of, like, people going on, like, these, like, awesome, you know, like, to, like, Bali, and they stay in these bungalows, like, built on the ocean on these stilts. It was kind of like that, but on this weird river where, like, you did not want to get in because you were, like, there are piranhas and crazy stuff in there, like snakes. And even, like, walking around, I mean, there was, like, a giant snake in the little cafeteria area, which totally freaked me out.
You're a big fan of snakes.
I do not like snakes, do not like spiders. I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? And they had this, like, weird raccoon monkey thing that would also, like, run around the rafters in there. And it was like, you're in the jungle, you know, and there's mosquitoes everywhere. That first day, I went back and I was reading my journal before we went and did this show. Because that was the one thing we had to do for a month was just keep a journal. That was our only assignment. That's all we were graded on, was to write a journal. So I went back and I read it. And then the first day we went on, like, a hike. And I remember just, like, bathing myself in 100% DEET bug spray because they have, there's, you know, malaria and all kinds of stuff. And walking through the jungle, and it was just crazy. And then, like, that night, like, the very first or second night, the professor was like, yeah, okay, well, this shaman's going to come tomorrow, and, you know, it's going to be this opportunity for you all to have this healing experience with this drug, basically. And so I was like, well, like, what's it like? And they were like, well, it's kind of like shrooms, but on steroids. And I was like, what? Like, I don't have like nothing to compare that to. And so, like, I was really scared at first because I thought, like, I'm going to get like really high because I've never been high before. And then, like, wander off into the jungle and get like eaten by piranhas
or a jaguar
like who knows, like, or get like bit by a snake and drown in the river.
Did
you know?
He push this like it was a requirement?
No, he didn't. Like, he was like really chill about it.
I see.
But like, he was full on like there to experiment with drugs. Like, there were other students I think were kind of there for that same reason too, after I had already gotten there.
You
and figured
were just
that
there
out.
For pottery.
I was there for pottery and dolphins, like, what? And so then, yeah, he just said, well, if you want, you don't want to do it, that's fine. But it was like everyone was doing it except for like one weird kid. And I was like, well, I only live once.
Man, peer
so
pressure.
Like,
there you go.
And then I was like, I may as well just do it. Like, it's going to be like, and he said it was really safe. And he's done it before and a lot of times. And people go through this as like a healing process. So I was like, all right, like, I guess I'll just do it. My roommate, little friend
when
was
in Rome,
doing it.
You yeah. do as a Romans.
So... And it's a very specific thing. Like, you know, some people, like, they go down there and they take the stuff for like days on end to like cure cancer. Like, it's serious business when people go down there for like the actual like medicinal purposes. But like, this professor was just there for fun. Like, one time I remember, like, the first day we got there to like Lima, you know, you can buy different sort of like prescription drugs, like from drugstores. And he was, and some of the students were like, you know, is this okay if we do it? And he was like, well, you know, yeah, it's fine. Just, you know, just enjoy them while you're here, but get rid of them when we go home. Like, that
wow.
was like his, I was like, what have I gotten myself into?
So this guy was tenured.
Yeah. Like, his finger, he had lost two fingers on his hand because he was throwing pottery like on a wheel, and his fingers had gotten caught and severed because he was on drugs. I learned that later too. I was like, oh, cool,
this guy sounds like quite the guy.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the story. So like the next day, if you were going to participate with this ayahuasca, you had to basically not eat anything all day because it gets you really sick. And for me, I'm like, what? Like, I'm gonna pass out. So I, of course, like, ate a little bit of food, and I knew from drinking that, you know, if you get too
Hold
drunk.
Hold on a second. Okay. They said, don't take any food.
Yeah, or like eat like a really light, like, and they had like, you can have like a half a banana and some like white fish.
And so you just disregarded this.
No, I didn't. Like, I tried as best I could not to eat that much, but I was hungry. Like,
sure. Did they say why you shouldn't eat anything?
Well, they just said like it can be upsetting to your stomach.
I
was like, oh, like I had like
I
no idea.
Because usually when you would take something on an empty stomach, it's because it would be like a far more powerful reaction.
Well,
right?
Probably that too.
I see.
Yeah, I for sure. I mean, because what? Yeah, it's a liquid and it hits you like that. So and I kind of like stashed away some food in my room, even though I knew that like animals could probably try and come in and get it. But it was just like some bread, and like, you know, from like drinking too much. If you drink a lot, you want to like have some bread to like soak it up later. So I was like, eh, I'll just stash some bread in my room, and So then we get there at night, and there's generators that keep the lights on, the electricity. And so, you know, those went off like right away. And it's just like this room with these shamans and then all of us. And they have like these pillows basically you can sit on the ground, on the wood floor. And then they had buckets in front of every single person. And that's when I knew that it was not going to be good. Because
those are vomit buckets.
Puke buckets. Like, I was like, oh, no, like, am I gonna Great. Get like really sick? And of course, it's like pitch dark. Like, I had a flashlight, I think, with me, but I was just like, what am I getting myself into? And they start off by like smoking some tobacco and kind of like talking about what it's like to be a shaman, and then how they made the
what
ayahuasca.
What do these shaman look like?
They're just Peruvian dudes. Not, I don't know.
Just wearing like
they're
pants
just,
and
oh,
a
yeah,
button
like,
up
like,
shirt.
Like sweatpants and like some t-shirt from a basketball team in the
US.
So
they were wearing like, some crazy.
No, they were not in like full regalia or anything. But they, but they did. They took it very seriously. Well, you know, I don't know. They took it very seriously. And they talked about the process of like making it from the vine and then these leaves. And they would, you know, boil it down. And then they had it and they lifted it up, you know, after all their hours of hard work. And it's like in this like Dr. Pepper bottle. You know, like, it's like, oh, so sick. Like, yeah, it was.
They put their ayahuasca in a Dr. Pepper bottle?
Yeah, like a, you know, what is that, 16 ounce?
Oh, my God.
It wasn't like it was in like a chalice. Like, what?
Are you sure this was on the level, these really shamans? It wasn't like Bob and Bill Shaman, the family or something like that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we had to like, I think we had to pay extra. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think we did have to like pay a little bit extra for the experience and to for their their service. Yeah. And so then, you know, they had like a little shot, like a shot glass that they poured it in and handed it to everyone going around the circle. After they had, of course, like cleansed the room with their tobacco and like spit stuff in places. Like, I don't really, it was hard to keep up because their English wasn't very good and they were talking a lot in Spanish. And then the professor was trying to interpret, but it was like not the best. And so then like, and then they chant and they sing. And like, well, first of all, this stuff is disgusting. It's like this like thick, green, bitter, chalky. It's disgusting.
What
like,
can you compare it to?
Like, okay, like really watery oatmeal, but green, maybe. But less, yeah, it's like thick like
and
that.
What did it taste like?
Like dirt. That's really gross. Like dirt with mashed up bugs. I don't know. It was horrible. Super gross. And so then like, and it's really dark because you can't see anyone around you. So I'm kind of like, you know, like I can tell that my buddy's, you know, right next to me or whatever. And the other person's sitting right next to me, too. But then they start chanting it over and over and over and over. And then people are sitting there. And all of a sudden I hear people around me just puking into these buckets. And it starts to like kind of smell weird. And more people are puking. And it's like, oh, God. And then I just got like really sick, like really ill. Like I wanted to puke. But like everyone was puking and I'm like, I don't know these people. Like I can't puke. It's disgusting. And I don't want to vomit. Like I don't want to get sick. So I was just like, mind over matter, you know, like it's going to be fine. But I was like pouring sweat, like shaking. And like I couldn't sit up anymore. So I felt like really, really tired. And I think you were supposed to sit, but like I couldn't sit any longer. So then I like laid down in the fetal position on like my little pillow that I was sitting on and was just like shaking back and forth like a crazy person because I was just so ill.
Let me read some of this here very quickly while you get to this part.
Oh, great.
Author Don Jose Campos claims that people may experience profound positive life changes subsequent to consuming. Vomiting can follow the ingestion. This purging is considered by many shamans and experienced users to be an essential part of the experience as it represents a release of negative energy and emotions built up over the course of one's life. It says the ingestion can cause significant but temporary emotional and psychological distress.
I was distressed.
Oh, yeah.
Very distressed. But then, like, I was just so tired. I was so tired. And, like, I had to close my eyes. And then, like, I felt like I was asleep, but then I was just tripping. And, like, the first thing I saw, like, and it felt like a dream. I felt like I was just having a crazy dream.
But you felt like you were...
asleep. What? I felt like I was asleep and having a crazy dream.
Okay. But you were... But did you know you were awake?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
It was kind of like... if you ever had, like, a really bad fever and you're kind of sleeping, you're kind of awake, you're kind of having a weird dream, you're kind of, like, trying to pull yourself out of it. But, like... I felt like I was going to sleep and then dreaming, and I had this like man in a suit like walking towards me with like a briefcase in his hand, but like he didn't have a head, and like out of like the collar of the suit were like these giant big floppy bunny ears.
They were floppy ears.
Yeah, they went up and like fell over, just like a like you think of any, you know, Easter
but no
bunny.
Head. It was just a suit, and where the head should be, there were two giant ears.
Mm-hmm. Like clear as day. And then like when I started to like realize like what the heck am I looking at? Like I opened my eyes and then like I was back in Peru. I was like, hey, what's up, guys? Like everyone's supposed to be there and there's chanting and like it was like, like nothing. I felt totally normal, like sober, not high, like whatever. I felt fine. But like they chant and they chant over and over and over again. And it's like this, it's hard to explain, but like their chanting is like so incredibly soothing. Like I can't explain anything is like more soothing than their chanting was. And they would like pause for a second before they like restarted. And it was like, oh my God, no, keep chanting. Like it was just like they the most amazing thing to listen to. And it made you close your eyes again. And then you close your eyes, you feel like you're going to sleep. And then when you're going to sleep, you have these dreams. And it was just you tripping. And then you see something else. And then I remember seeing but I remember experiencing being underwater and like looking around at these wooden pilings like I was under a dock.
You were a whale.
I was a fish, not a whale, because I was thinking like, well, I gotta breathe here. I'm under this dock. Like it was kind of almost like a nightmare thing for me, being like trapped under a dock. And it was almost like, oh, I should be like panicking, but it was like, no, I'm fine here. I'm a fish. Like I belong under this water, under the dock. And then I was like, what the heck? And I opened my eyes and then like, boom, it's gone. And so like, it's really, really, I felt difficult for me to like enjoy the experience because I kept overanalyzing and questioning everything I was seeing. I couldn't surrender to the process, to the experience at all. Cause I was just, every time you analyze it, it's gone. And then you're on to the next thing, or you're awake and your eyes are open and then you got to like go back into it. So like it was really bizarre how much you were in control of what you were seeing, but not in control at all of what was appearing.
So what else did you see?
Well, I did see a lot of the animals, like seeing the animals, kind of like, you know, those little flip books where like you flip the pages and they're
sure.
individual pictures, but they together look like they're moving.
Yes.
It's kind of like that. And so it's like you see a frog and then it grows these claws out of it and then it becomes a something else and then a human face and then the blonde hair becomes a lion's mane and then it becomes a blah 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 blah, and it just goes and goes and goes and it's super crazy. And it's kind of weird because those are the sort of things that like could be similar across cultures. Like would an Incan person or someone that lived in the jungle see someone with a briefcase? Probably not. Like I was reading my journal and I wrote about this experience that I was going shoe shopping with my sister. And I remembered that really vividly. And I was like, whoa, that was weird. And yeah, just like you said, a lot of people have like these life changing, profound experiences. And like, I can't say that I really did, but one thing that's kind of always stuck with me was that like, I remember being somewhere where I had all these little things like right in front of me, like right in front of my chest or my stomach, and almost like holding on to them and like keeping them safe and like protecting them, like keeping them close to me. And like there was like some sort of like voice or person or thing that was somewhere around me that was just kept on like repeating like, these are yours. You have to take care of them now. And it was almost like this like maternal sort of like instinct kind of like was like speaking to me, I guess, which is super weird because I'm like, especially at that point in my life, I was like not about like babies or, you know, whatever. So that was a really weird thing that I experienced that sort of stuck with me, that maybe went beyond sort of the animals morphing into other animals. But then the next day, like I was like super pumped. Like I wanted to talk to all my friends about like, what did you see? Like I saw tons of crazy stuff, you know? And my buddy that was with me, like early on when she was tripping, she I kind of like checked in with her. I was like, hey, how you doing? Are you okay? You know, she was like, I was just in the Rocky Mountains horseback riding and it was so beautiful, Whitney. And I was like, what? She's like, I've never been there before, but I know I was there. And so like, I know she had like some like pretty cool experiences, but like, I don't know if everyone else like the next day was just, like playing too cool for school and like didn't want to talk about it. Or what? But I do think that a lot of those people that were throwing up, that they didn't feel a thing. A lot of people said that like nothing happened. They were sitting there bored out of their mind. Mm. And I think that they puked it up, then it was just out of their system as quickly as it went back in.
Now, did you, when you were comparing with your buddy, I mean, was there anything that you both saw?
You know, it was really hard to like talk to anyone about it. I don't know why, but like no one really wanted to talk about it. And I don't know if it was because no one was like tripping as crazy as I was tripping. It was what later when a few of my like girlfriends were talking about it, that they didn't have anything happen. So I think that like I had a more powerful experience being one of the, maybe the only person, or maybe there was someone else that didn't throw up. So you know, some people had like another go around of it, but I don't know. For some reason, no one wanted to talk about it with me. And I thought it was like a really cool thing to share. But we did, you know, like going through, like on the way back home, went past this mural on this wall that was, it was a painting of all these different animals and this like really beautiful like scenery, but all the different animals morphing into other animal parts. And it was in Spanish, it said, you know, visions on ayahuasca. And it was like, whoa, like, yeah, like when I saw that, I was like, that's exactly what I saw. So some, I mean, obviously people are seeing the same thing, and it's probably where people got the inspiration to do a lot of this pottery. But I will say too, that like that night they like ended it, and I have no idea how long they were chanting for, but it felt like hours. And, so they were told, you know, go back to your rooms or whatever. And then I went to like go to sleep. Like I got in the little bed, but I closed my eyes and like I was just still tripping. And by that point, it almost got like really, really annoying because I was like tired. I was exhausted. I had seen all this crazy stuff and I wanted to go to sleep. And every time I closed my eyes, I was in another like crazy, crazy world. Not like scary, but like I couldn't get any rest. So I went and I had like that little piece of bread and stuff that I'd stashed away. And then I was able to finally go to sleep. And the next day, you know, everyone felt fine. But just didn't want to talk about it, which is really annoying. And like one of my like sort of like that was the very beginning part of that trip, too. And by the end, I was sort of talking to other people about it. And one of the girls that I got close to had experienced and experimented with a lot of other drugs. And so she was really excited to try ayahuasca. And she said that she was really disappointed. She kept throwing up. And then she said, this is like so gross. This is an overshare. And I'm sorry, but it is.
Must we?
Can I?
Let's just, how no? about this? Tell okay. me about the lizard.
The lizard?
Didn't you see like a lizard or something scaly or something?
Well, there's a lot of like reptiles that change into other
reptiles,
things.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, all animals. I thought I was really concerned I'd also be afraid that I'd see snakes because I don't like snakes.
And did
but
you see any snakes?
I probably did see some snakes, but it was not scary. It was not scary at all. It was, if anything, really, really relaxing. Once you got past like the violent illness, then it was really enjoyable. But like people asked, like, well, would you do it again? Like the next day? And it was like, oh God, no. And for like 2 years later, I was like, oh no, like I would not do it. Like, I don't know how people do it days on end to like cure whatever sickness they have. I don't know if I could do it just because like you get so sick. Like it takes a lot out of you.
Did the shamans talk about any, successful healings that they had done?
I know people were there, with treating cancer. We went to this
other... So there were people that were there with you.
Yeah.
During this thing that were fighting cancer.
Yeah.
With ayahuasca.
Yeah, and other jungle treatments. Yeah, there are people there that had, like, given up on Western medicine or were given no other chance and were there and were trying it. And, yeah, it was... I remember talking with one woman, I think she was from Europe, and it was... And she had been there for weeks and was doing all these treatments. And I almost wanted to ask her, like, do you feel any better? You know, but it was kind of a fine line of conversation. So, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that go and have good experiences with it. I guess the professor, too, had gone and helped out on a documentary or something where they were doing research or something about these drugs or medicines or whatever you want to call them. So
all I know is I'm looking on Wikipedia here and they've got a lot of illustrations of ayahuasca in the bowl and not a single one of them is in a Pepsi bottle.
What? Let me...
Not a single one. These all look like they're in metal pails.
What?
Yeah.
I'm looking at it now too. What do you think I... Ooh, you can look at visions too.
You can look at visions?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I just did Google images and you can do visions.
I see.
People's.
Well, let's do that. Google ayahuasca and then let's look at some of the images. And is there anything there that looks familiar?
Well, let's see. I mean, I'm just looking at one of them, and it's like this jungle.
Actually, hold that thought. We appear to have a caller here on the line for you. You are on After Dark Radio. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
This is Steve, and I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
What's up, Steve?
I had this pretty wild experience with one of my friends. I was at a party, and I'm not really a partier. Like, I don't really party that much. And me and my buddy decided to go outside because, you know, like I said, I really don't gimmick anything. So I was outside smoking a cigarette with my friend. And where we live, there's it's like a hill that goes down into a dead end, right?
Sure.
So I'm there leaning up against the fence with one of my buddies, and we see this car pull up. And granted, there's only like two houses on the end of the road, right? And the house across the street is, you know, vacant. It's a dead end. And luckily, like completely sober at this point. And sitting there, and we're smoking a cigarette, and we're like looking kind of confused. And we watch, and this woman comes out of the car. She has two grocery bags and completely walks to the house and like completely through the house, like through it.
She walked through the wall.
I can't even explain to you. Walked through the door, like the door didn't even open. And I'm completely sober, and we both looked at each other and said the same exact thing. We looked at each other and we were like, did that lady just walk through that house? You know, I'm dead serious, man. And I'm a very big skeptic. Like, I don't really believe in that type of stuff. But it's been something that's, like, freaked me out for quite some time. And ever since then, you know, I've always tried to, you know, see if I could find types of stuff like that. But nothing ever since then has ever happened like that to me. And I heard about, you know, your show because I subscribe to the, you know, to the Observer and stuff like that. But I always wanted to tell somebody about it, and I just thought it was wild. Like, literally, like, she wasn't, like, it didn't look like an apparition either. It looked like a human being, like a woman. She had blonde hair, and she had two grocery bags in her arm, and completely just right through the house. And we both, like, were freaked out, and we walked around to see if there was a person in the house or lights on. Nothing, absolutely nothing. But here's the crazy part, as long as that isn't even crazy enough.
No, that wasn't crazy at all. Go ahead. Yeah, what's the crazy part?
That wasn't crazy enough. But here's the thing, though. The car was still there. And they called the police the next morning because there was a car there. Nobody had left it there because I thought maybe, you know, maybe it was somebody from the party or something like that, because there was a lot of people there. But like I said, I don't drink. I don't, you know, smoke gimmick. I don't do anything like that.
Sure.
I smoke cigarettes. That's about it. And so the next day, whenever I went back to my buddy's house to ask, you know, what was whatever happened to that car, and they said the police came after they had called, and it got towed. It didn't belong to anybody. It had bad license plates. Like, apparently someone had tried to drive it illegally or something like that. It was like a regular just hatchback car, and they had license plates for like a van. So someone had tried to, you know, like take a license plate off or whatever. I don't even know how to explain it. It was just definitely something that was very weird.
And were you just too freaked out to go knock on the door?
I didn't have the balls to knock on the door. Like I said, I'm a skeptic, and once I saw that, I kind of freaked out. We both looked at each other at the same time and said, that lady just walked through that house. And he saw it too. It wasn't like I was by myself or messed up or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, yeah. I kind of know what you're saying. Your phone is actually breaking up right here. Your phone's breaking up. Yeah, well, listen, we'll let you go, but I want to thank you very much for the call. And a very strange story. Did you see anybody walk through walls during your ayahuasca trip?
Well, they, you know, appeared and disappeared. So, you know, like They could have.
That's
right. Saying there's some ayahuasca in the cigarettes?
No, I don't know. I don't know what was in that cigarette there, but that's certainly a weird story right there. I thought he was calling about your story, because as you're talking about your story, the phone was ringing for like 5 minutes, but no, apparently not. So in your pictures, anything you see there that strikes you as familiar?
Well, there's just some really, and I have seen some pictures here of the plastic bottle, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so... And
so I guess he was legit.
Yes. But there's one here that I'm kind of chuckling at, because there's a person just like it's a drawing, and it's all these really, you know, colorful like swirls and stuff, but it's of a person and they're puking green vomit, and I'm like, that looks familiar. But yeah, I mean, it's just like these cool jungle scenes with people, and they're all over the place, and there's like little scenes within a big scene, and that's exactly what it is just the like most fantastical thing you could think of. I don't know.
Yeah, there's I was trying to Google ayahuasca rabbit ears, but I didn't see the guy you saw with the suit and no head.
Did you ever see like Donnie Darko?
No.
That was kind of like that.
No, never saw that. But so essentially what you're saying is that after experiencing this, you believe that when we go back and look at cave art, for example, and they've got all of the half man, half animal drawings and such, that likely this was something that they had seen on some sort of hallucination, some sort of trip.
Yeah, I mean, from studying anthropology.
Patently obvious to you.
Yeah, I think so. And from like studying anthropology, you know, people that spend their lives living close to nature have a very good understanding of what happens when you mix certain plants together or when you boil one down. And so, yeah, I mean, I really do think that people had a good understanding of how to use and abuse them as well. And have been experimenting with all kinds of things for a very long time. So, yeah, cave art or whatever. I think this vine only grows in the tropics, though, this ayahuasca vine. But I'm sure there's other things like it all over the place.
All right, let's try one more call here, see if this person is on topic. You are on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
It's in San Antonio.
Ed, yes. What's up?
What's going on with me?
Hello,
what's
Ed.
What's going on is your phone is also terrible, Ed, so get in a place where we got good reception.
Oh, I'm sorry. What I'm going to ask is, what will the after effects?
Oh, my God.
After you get this? Like, well, like, let's say you take acid. Some people, the balls of their backs will be stiff. If you drink alcohol, you'll be hung over. You know, other drugs have different side effects, you know, after effects.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any kind of after effects after you took this?
All right, we're going to let you go, Ed, but I got most of your question. Your phone was just terrible, but she'll answer here on the air. Go ahead, Whit.
And that was one question that I asked about to the professor, you know, before I took it, because I was like, well, I'm in the
Actually,
jungle.
By the way, just for those of you that didn't understand Ed's question, he was asking, what are the after effects of ayahuasca? He says if you take acid, you get a backache afterwards. If you, you know, drink alcohol, you get a hangover. Are there any after effects from ayahuasca? Good question, Ed, despite your terrible phone.
And that was one of the things I asked the professor, because we were out in the jungle with, like, in the middle of nowhere. I was like, that's the last thing I need to be is like sick. You know, it's really hot. And he was like, oh no, you're going to be fine. You're going to feel amazing.
Sounds like quite a piece of work here.
Oh yeah. Dude, let me tell you another story. Because we, like 2 weeks later, we were in, I think we were right outside Machu Picchu. They had like a little town there where it's basically, it's up pretty high in the Andes, but it's close to Machu Picchu. And we were going to go meet another friend of his at a house. And he was also some sort of spiritual healer. And he had spent the day with him, you know, prior to that of us meeting in the lobby of this hotel. And it was a pretty nice hotel. And so we're getting together in a group, and you know, we're talking about where we're going to go and how we're going to get there and the logistics of it. And there's someone else there that's kind of explaining this. I don't know if it was like the bus driver or something. And then the professor he was like tweaking out. He was like going crazy, and he was like looking around the room, and he was kind of like really, really concerned about something. And there's nothing to be concerned about. And all of a sudden he's like, hold on, guys, hold on. So someone's telling me something. Hold on. And then he like opened this random closet door to like look inside to like talk to someone. Like he was legit hearing voices.
Oh my God.
And he was like really messed up like the whole night.
Oh man.
And I was like, what is this guy on? Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure he was on all kinds of things.
He'd been to the drugstore you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. More than that, he'd been hanging out with. And then I think we had tried. Oh yeah, this was also in Peru. We went to like this area where it was like the desert, and they have these, I think they call them Huaca del Bruja or something like that. So like these, this like witch's pyramid kind of thing, and they were archaeological sites, and so we visited those. But then like nearby, they had this, I guess cave. And so then, of course, there was some other shaman there. You can kind of get where he's going with all this stuff. And they had some sort of elixir that you could drink and then, like, say a prayer. And then later on, this is going to sound so crazy. They had these people that would lead you down the cave. And it was like this spiral staircase made of stone going, like, straight down into the earth to, like, this pool. And at the pool, like you were instructing, you take it down one by one by yourself. It was pitch black. You have to hold their hand. And when you get to the bottom, they would instruct you to like take off all your clothes and go swimming in these like sacred waters.
This doesn't sound sketchy.
Yeah, this is like so. And so then I was like, kind of like, it was like maybe like the middle of the trip. And I was like, I don't know about all this stuff. Like, this is a lot. Like, now I'm getting naked. Like, really? And it was just like, I don't know. And you had kind of like sipped their little elixir beforehand. And I was like,
I would not have touched that elixir before going in that thing.
Feel anything. And I was like, whatever. Like, I'll go down, you know, and like maybe I'll get in the water. I don't know. I don't think I got in the water because it was cold, was the other thing. I was like freezing. I didn't want to get wet and then put my clothes back on and freeze some more. But yeah, that was another crazy thing we did, was going to spiral staircase, and people were like, oh my God, it's getting really slippery on the steps. And I was like, oh God, I'm gonna like fall to my death in this well.
Oh, listen, we got more people on the line for you. So right. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Ishmael from Virginia.
Ishmael, what's up?
Nothing much. This is sort of unrelated to ayahuasca. This is just something that happened to me.
All right, we're on that topic tonight. Things that happened to me, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not so paranormal. It's nothing too crazy, but it just sort of freaked me out and stuck with me. I'm 23 now. When I was about 12 or 13, we moved to the house we're in now, and I got my own room for the first time, which was really cool. It was kind of scary at first, but it was all right. I was a big boy. But around like the first year I was in my own room, I had all these posters around my bed. I had Caribbean poster, a poster of the world, poster of the U.S., a Scarface poster, just like I had five or six posters surrounding my room sort of in a circle. And I was laying in bed. You know how when you're in like the dark long enough, you can kind of see what's going on in a dark room? You
sure.
Pretty much can see stuff? Yeah. I had my eyes open a little bit. I was just sitting around laying there, you know, just trying to fall asleep. And then I felt this incredible burst of cold air in the middle of the summer. And I know this wasn't my air conditioning or anything like that. It was enough where I sat up in my bed like, holy crap, what is that? And just as I sat up, every poster in all directions of my room surrounded me, behind me, next to me, they all shook and then dropped to the floor at the exact same time. And I freaked out, ran out of my room, running to my parents. They came in. They didn't care or think anything was up. Freaked me out forever. I never put posters up again. I never could explain it, but I know what happened. It's insane, but it just freaked me out. Like, pretty much the rest of my life going forward, I'm pretty scarred.
That would have scared the hell out of me. So now, so you can't hang posters anymore.
I have no posters in my room now. This was easily for me, this was the scariest thing that ever happened to me, but people just think it was either nothing or it just isn't that scary of a thing to happen to you, but I mean, this was incredibly scary for me.
That's probably pretty annoying when someone's like, well, probably the temperature dropped. And
that's
the
right.
Adhesive. That's probably really annoying to hear.
You know that when houses are haunted, the room supposedly gets very cold.
Yeah, like I thought maybe it was a house or like had something to do with me or like, I don't know. But I looked at like the house. The house was only built in like, I think 2000 or like 1999. So I don't think it was haunted, hopefully, but I mean, I don't know. I just could never get any sort of good sleep in there ever again. I've been there for like the last several years too. It's just always in the back of my mind, just what happened. I'll never know.
Wow. Listen, I want to thank you very much for the call. Thanks so much for that story. We're flooded with calls here, so we may as well keep going. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Dave from Wisconsin.
Dave, what's happening?
I really don't have too many comments. I haven't been listening to the show, but I just got in. I did go to the bars, but I haven't been drinking. And I just want to say, I want to thank you, Brian. Just, I mean, I've been listening to your stuff for like a long time. And this was one of the shows I did request probably about a year and a half ago, maybe a year or so. So I want to thank Whitney for actually coming on the show.
Dave has been requesting this forever,
really?
Whitney. You should know that, yes.
For stories or?
Yes, your ayahuasca story.
Personally and foremost, I want to know about your ayahuasca, I don't know if you want to call it a trip or experience, whatever. So I do want to thank you for that. I also want to thank Brian more specifically because, not because of the show per se, but just because I've been listening to this show probably, I mean, how long have you been doing this, Brian? What, 3-4 years now or so?
2011.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now I've started doing jiu-jitsu for about a month and a half. I just feel a lot more positive, just a lot more happy with my life. So I just want to thank you and say I look forward to listening back on this tonight's show. I think it's going to be a really good one. And I just want to thank you for that. And I've been calling for probably like the last 20 minutes now, ever since I got back to my house. So I just want to say thank you.
So it was you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening and being a great constant caller. And and I'm glad you're starting jiu-jitsu. It'll change your life for the better.
Yeah.
Trust me. I know. I mean, I've not been necessarily like a fat guy, but I've always been a I don't want to say a stronger person, but I'm learning that. When I rolled with blue belts, it's a whole different world.
Oh yeah, wait till you start rolling with some brown belts.
I rolled with one actually. We did what was it, 4-minute rounds?
Yeah,
I got or no, it was 3-minute rounds. Then I got tapped 7 times within 3 minutes. So
congratulations, it was your first lesson in jiu-jitsu, tap.
Well, no, here's the thing. Well, I will tell you this funny story. I got to the point where I realized I was not doing anything, and then I literally just sat there, and within about 12 seconds, I was done. So,
oh, yeah.
I will say that. Just have a good night, man. Thanks for doing the show.
All right. Thanks so much.
And thanks for Whitney.
Of course. Thank you very much for the call. And let's do one last call here. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Sammy in New Jersey.
Sammy, what's going on? Sammy's a future co-host thanks to Whitney's Whale Scout Indiegogo.
Ooh, thank you so much.
That's right.
No, thank you. I just called to say that I will say everything that Ed just said.
You will say that everything that Ed just said?
Yeah, everything that he just said. Just assume that I just said it.
I see.
He showed a lot of appreciation, and good luck to you, Whitney, on everything. And
thank you.
A wonderful show listening. Actually, one of my good friends tried. He said he went down to do ayahuasca, but he couldn't finish it. I think it was too much for him. And I believe it's in Peru. Is that true?
Well, I think they do have ayahuasca in other countries as well, but I believe it's just in the Amazon. But, you know, places in Brazil and Ecuador would also have it.
I think he wants to try it again and finish it. I'm assuming he was one of the guys who vomited stuff, but even with doing about half of it, he said it was definitely a life-changing experience either way.
Wow.
It is a big deal. It is a big deal, so.
And you have to travel out of the country. I don't know why America doesn't allow it, but I assume because of its similar properties to other drugs.
Yeah, I think just that it's hallucinogenic, that they don't want it here, and yeah.
Listen, Sammy, when you're a co-host on the show with me, we'll have a long talk about, I've been holding in a big rant about drivers.
Uh-oh.
And the last thing I need in this country is everyone taking ayahuasca and getting out there on the road. I can't handle that.
That's a very, very, very good point.
I can't handle them when they're sober out there on the road.
Yeah, I could, half the time I'm too out of it to drive sober too, and I don't drink, so I can understand that.
That's
worry,
right.
I'm a safe driver. But that's it. It was a very good show. I'm glad to hear it. He said, I told him I'm going to send him a link to the website to hear the show because he said he was interested to hear what you had to say. And look forward to everything in the future.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Sammy. And of course, he's going to be a co-host coming up soon on the Brian and Vinny Show because he donated to the Whale Scout Indiegogo. So before we go, Whit, let's get some plugs in. Tell everybody about Whale Scout, your Indiegogo, and how they can get some wacky perks.
Oh, yeah. We've got tons of wacky perks. Unfortunately, we did run out of the Brian and Vinny co-hosting perk, but there's a lot of other really cool perks up there. A lot of whale-related items, your Whale Scout mugs, stickers. They also have signed F4W issues, 1 in 1,000 that'll be signed. Those are going to be really cool. And, you know, whale photos, posters of the marine mammals that we have in this area. So there's a lot of really cool perks up there. You could even spend a day with yourself, Brian Alvarez, at the Empire. So a lot of really funny things up there, too. And you can read about the project and what we're using the money for. You know, we're getting these really neat identifying vests and educational materials. We're also, you know, working on getting a mobile site for our website. That's going to be just super helpful for everything that we do. And it's going to help people connect with us. So, you know, that's what's going on. And there's a YouTube video there to watch what's what we're doing. So just go to Indiegogo and type in Whale Scout, or just go to our Whale Scout, our website, whalescout.org, for more information.
That's right. It's whalescout.org. You can check out Indiegogo.com and Google Whale Scout, or just put Whale Scout in Indiegogo.com. And they are trying to raise money for these vests and educational laminated materials that will be given to all of the Whale Scouts on the shore. So if you are in the Seattle area, the whales are coming. They could be here tomorrow, right?
Yeah, any day now. Really, any day now, the whales will be coming through the Seattle area. And so if you live anywhere close, you know, turn on your mobile notifications for our Twitter and our Facebook so that you can know when there's a Whale Scout volunteer at a beach near you looking for whales. That's the easiest way. Like, don't be fooled and think you have to go to SeaWorld to watch whales. That's a load of crap. You can see them right in your own backyard, almost anywhere you live if you're near the ocean. So, turn on your mobile notifications so that you can watch whales with us. And, you know, it's been a really dry summer, but now that the rains have come back, that's going to send all the scent from the rivers out to the ocean. That's going to lead the salmon back in to spawn. And with salmon come whales. So it's really exciting.
That's right. We got to wrap it up. But for more, you can go to whalescout.org. If you head up there, there is a link to the Facebook, which is facebook.com/whalescout. There is a link to the Twitter, which is twitter.com/whalescout. And certainly if you are in the Seattle area in the next couple of weeks, you're going to be able to head out to the beaches for free and watch whales with Whale Scouts. So support the Whale Scout Indiegogo. That link is up there as well. And Woody, thank you, of course, for doing the show today. It was great.
Thank you for listening to me ramble.
That's right. And of course, thanks everybody for listening. We're going to be back next week with a brand new show. Make sure you check out AfterDarkRadioShow.com. This show will be up as a free replay in about 15 minutes, and it'll be replaying throughout the day tomorrow, actually. Throughout the day tomorrow, it'll be replaying on the Dark Matter Radio Network all day long, so you can check that out. Make sure you support the Dark Matter Radio Network. ArtBell.com, of course, is the official website there. A big thank you to our illustrious webmaster, Keith Rowland, the great Art Bell as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week.